Welcome to the Saints Happy Hour Podcast
with host Ralph Malbro and featuring bloggers Andrew Juge of SaintsNation.com, Kevin Held of The Team Drops the Ball, and Dave Cariello of Canal Street Chronicles. This podcast is nothing but serious football talk and hardcore analysis.
Which four of you would survive the longest in the zombie apocalypse, and in which order would you die?
Well, Ralph, no offense, you're going first.
Oh, definitely. No.
The zombies would smell Dave's sugar blood and target him.
They'd get his...
I don't even have a joke, Dave smells like nougat.
Now here's your host, Ralph Malbro.
Welcome to the Saints Happy Hour Podcast. As always, we are sponsored by you, the fans. By the way, thanks to everybody for downloading and listening to the Drunk Saints History Podcast and me and Dave, the NFC Championship. Already over 1,300 of you people have listened to it and downloaded it. It's phenomenal. People are quoting me the drunk tweets on Twitter. We love it.
Did we sound drunk?
Oh,
I didn't actually listen back to it.
Oh, my God, dude. We are... We promise the people Drunk Saints History and we deliver.
I was drunk.
We don't deliver quality, but we deliver the drunkness.
I just wanted to know if I sound drunk, because I've been known to, you know, hide it very well. I'll wake up the next morning and I'll be like, dude, I was so wasted. They're like, really? You seem fine.
So it was great. So thanks to everybody. We'll have the extra podcast this month, the second bonus one of the draft. We'll figure out what we're going to do. We got to see if we have Brian on, other draft experts that hawk in their wares. We'll see, but you'll get it before the draft, we promise. Andrew, the Saints,
yes, sir.
The Saints actually did a couple of moves this week. Let's start with the one that I think is the most important. They allowed me to rummage through my closet and find my Bush jersey, 25, because they're bringing back Raphael Bush.
Reggie Bush.
It only says Bush, and he can be 25 again, do us all a solid, and we can have the jersey again. I wouldn't say it's like a critical move, Andrew, but it's a really nice move, I thought. You know, they need to say they need.
Yes. I mean, especially for what they paid.
Oh,
I think
God.
You
we'll
look
get to
at
that
it,
in a second.
Yeah, I mean, I think you get a guy that, I mean, first of all, when you let go of Jairus Byrd, there's a need at safety. I mean, we all expect Von Bell and Kenny Vaccaro to be the starters, and there's a little bit of a question mark about whether the Saints would employ this three safety look again, or, you know, if they would. And it's not really a three safety look. It's really just a safety that's playing in the box, playing nickel or dime in some cases. But they've really employed that guy maybe more so than a reserve corner. So you wondered if maybe with Jairus Byrd leaving, they would start to employ just using their corners to fulfill that role in the future. But now they have Raphael Bush coming back. I'm starting to think the three safety look is back in, but they really needed some depth. You know, obviously with Byrd gone and Roman Harper probably not coming back. So you didn't want to leave it up to the draft to make sure you got safety. So I'm happy Bush is back. And I think you're going to ask about the contract, so I'm going to let you do that now.
Well, I mean, Dave, I just wish
what would really make the season awesome is if they sign somebody else in the secondary whose name is either Donatello or Michelangelo or Leonardo. And we can start running with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle jokes. Please make that happen.
Is there anybody in the draft, Andrew, that could be that?
That has an
I don't think there's anyone in the draft named Donatello or Mike.
Donatello.
No.
I gotta get my Mike Dottillier draft book and look for that. But here's the thing. I know 90% of fans are like, look, NFL players, they're making hundreds of thousands of dollars. They're in the 1%, whatever, I don't care. But, Andrew, Sterling Moore got minimum. Raphael Bush got minimum. Raphael Bush, that poor man, took a 50% pay cut from last year. And he had a really decent year last year. And he's making that, and he's making half as much. And I've come to the point where I just really don't like a lot of fans are like, man, good for the Saints. They're getting great value. I'm to the point now, I'm like, fuck it. I want the players to get as much as they can because they're sacrificing their body. And is it – we? is it weird that I saw that contract and I was like, man, I feel bad for Rafael Bush. He got the shaft, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's just weird that, I mean, I understand he won the Super Bowl. I understand that he played really well this year, and I understand that, you know, he's a good player that deserves money, but it's just really weird to me that a number two corner like Logan Ryan can hit free agency and make $9 million a year or whatever his contract was, and the best Sterling Moore can get, I mean, he was really a number one corner. Now, granted, it was on a much worse defense, and I don't think Sterling Moore is a number one corner for any other team in the league, but for him to get 1 year under $1 million, I mean, it's just, I understand the difference between the two players, and it's clear which one's better, but I'm not sure there's an $8 million gap between those two guys. I mean, don't get me wrong, Logan Ryan's a good player, and I wish he was on the Saints, but, you know, the middle class, and or the, even I would say maybe the lower middle class,
fucked.
Is yeah, I mean, they're really getting squeezed out, and it's a bummer for guys like that.
I mean,
there's no way you can't tell me that Sterling Moore didn't play well enough to deserve, you know, like a 2 year, $5 million deal. And it's not that crazy. Rafael Bush played for 2.5 last year, played great. And the only explanation I have for him playing at the vets minimum now for the Saints on a 1 year deal after playing for more and playing well last year as a starter is that, you know, he crossed over into the dreaded 30s. And, I mean, he'll be 30 this year.
And the draft is super deep at corner and safety. So teams are like, fuck it, we're not paying a vet. Why pay a vet $2.5 million when we can draft a guy in the third round and get
four? Yeah, but that's a bummer. The bummer is the cap is at an all-time high. Yeah. Like, if the cap was still low, then I would be like, yeah, okay, it makes sense. But it just makes, like, the tide should be rising for everyone. I feel like, you know, the cap escalating to, you know, unheard of numbers, it's still not doing guys like Rafael Bush and Sterling Moore, guys you need on your team. Like, those guys have value.
It's not doing them any good. You know,
yeah, like, not every guy can be a number one corner or starting safety. I mean, you need special teams guys. You need backups.
And I feel like in other sports that where the money's exploding, like baseball and basketball, especially, like, the Astros have this guy, Aoki, and he's, like, their fifth outfielder. He's making $5 million a year. And I know baseball, they don't have as many players, but they don't have a cap. And it just, I feel like the you're right, the middle class is getting screwed. But Dave, the Saints didn't stop with bringing back Rafael Bush.
It's really a metaphor for our entire country. Economy.
Our current economy. And the middle class is getting shafted. But Dave, the Saints were not done with getting the band back together. They brought
but
back.
But wait, there's more.
There's more. They brought back Chase Daniel.
It's Daniels, by the way, just to clarify that.
Is it?
I'd like to see you pronounce
that. Oh my God, Ralph doesn't pick up on your jokes. He's like not sure of himself.
Did I get that wrong? I'm so bad at names that when you correct me, I'm so unsure of myself. I'm like, they're probably right. I don't know.
It's like Ralph legit just said, is it?
Yes, because here's the thing. Me pronouncing names is like me driving with my wife. I'm so bad at directions.
My wife could be completely wrong
and tell me to go the wrong way on a one-way street. And I'd be like, I got to do it. She knows it more than me. Like, that's where I am with names. Like, if you, like, Dave said it, and I was like, are you sure? That's how bad I am. But continue, Dave.
Let's keep calling him Chase Daniels. Man, stick with it the whole podcast.
Well, you know what?
By the end of this podcast, we're going to have Ralph saying it for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
No, I actually empathize with him because I own a store called Campus Connection, and people call it Campus Connections all the time and add that S, and it drives me nuts. And people send emails to campus.connections@yahoo that I never get. So if Chase is frustrated by the whole thing and being called the wrong name, I totally get it. But I like the signing. It's awesome. I mean, I've always liked him. I think personally, well, I mean, he's younger than Luke McCown. But you know, he's not going to be your starting quarter. Well, hopefully he's not.
Here's
he's always, I've been comfortable with him as, in a backup role. I've found him to be competent. And him and Matt Flynn, need to start a club of backup quarterback guys who just get paid.
Legend. And Chase
never
Daniel.
And he's never not have to do anything.
He's not a legend on the field, but he's a legend at the bank, baby.
Yeah, I mean,
you guys don't think there's a chance that Chase Daniel could be a bridge quarterback for the Saints at starter? A year or two while they develop some rookie. If
I hope not, because I want Drew Brees to play for two or three more years. Oh, God.
I would say that's
Chase Daniel as a
there.
Bridge is a pretty rickety bridge, Juge.
No, I didn't say I like it.
I would say that could potentially be their thinking. I mean, I think Drew's got another 3-4 even maybe 5 years.
But will those be with the Saints? That's the question.
Yeah. Yes, I do.
Well,
no,
Chase Daniels said...
We've talked about this before. Drew's not going anywhere. Drew's got a family here. He's all set up here to play for another team and to move. That's who's 37, 38 years old. I see him finishing here as a Saint. And at the same time, if we think he's going to play 4 or 5 years, personally, I think it's too early... that you future and have him sit. And there are two guys that I can think of, Steve Young and Aaron Rodgers. They're the only two quarterbacks I know
that McNair
hung around and held the clip. Yeah, okay. And held the clipboard for a while. And then finally, when they got their chance, you know,
became
great quarterbacks. And it's just such a rare thing. And I think we're too early at, because I do think Drew's playing for a little bit.
Well, my favorite thing about the Chase Daniel situation, Andrew, is Philadelphia.
I'm beside myself that Ralph just got the name right there.
Andrew's in a rage.
Let you finish your question. I'm so shocked that you said it right.
Well, it only took like 7-8 years. But my favorite part is that Phil, he's making $5 million. I texted Andrew. I was like, Chase Daniel, he's going to make $5 million. Andrew's like, what? That's going to kill the cap. And then I was like, but Philadelphia is paying $4.1 million of it. Andrew, how bad of a fucking contract was that Philadelphia gave him, where they are paying him $4.1 million this year, and he's not even on their team, and he wasn't even their starting quarterback.
Yeah, I think, I think they were expecting him to be the starter or at least kind of be in the mix to maybe start a few games until Carson Wentz could be ready. I don't think the expectation was that Wentz would come in and be pretty good right away necessarily. So I think Daniel signed there, I think, with the intention of starting. And once again, kind of a bummer. I mean, I think he went into Kansas City and Philadelphia with like the expectation that he would have a chance and be in a battle. And he lost both of them. So, you know, as much as I'm fine with him coming back and we'll see what happens with him and Luke McCown, I can't say I'm psyched about it. I mean, he's lost to Alex Smith, who has done well in his own right. And he lost
Alex
to
Smith. I feel like Kansas City would run off Alex Smith in 30 seconds if they had a better option.
Yeah, but my point is that if Chase Daniel was special, he wouldn't have lost out to both of those guys.
That's true.
And I think he's a fine backup, but yeah, I think there's a little bit of a Matt Flynn thing going on where he's looked good in a couple preseason games and he's got this market value, but at the end of the day, you don't really want him playing in games.
Here's the thing. Would you feel better about Luke McCown playing for 3 weeks or Chase Daniel? I guess that's the question.
I mean, it's pretty negligible for me, you know. I mean, that obviously the fact that they brought Daniel back tells me that they like him better. I mean, the only salient difference for me is that McCown's 34. He had back surgery a year and a half ago, and Daniel's 31 and probably healthier and has, you know, and with Breeze at his age and Breeze being in the final year of his deal, I think you have to be smart about having a little bit more youth. So that's why Daniel makes sense. But the only thing we have to go by is Daniel in preseason games for the Saints. And, you know, maybe those couple starts in Kansas City, which were mediocre, And McCown, who played against the Super Bowl defense on the road and played pretty well.
Yeah.
So, you know, between the two, I think it's negligible at best, and you could definitely make an argument that that one would be more comfortable with McCown.
Yeah, McCown wasn't really that good in that game, though, I will say.
He wasn't, or he was?
It was, 16-13? Like, he was all right. If I remember,
it was wasn't it 24-20, and he threw the pick in the end zone in the last play?
You might be right. I'll have to look that up.
I mean, they had a punt return for a touchdown, but I think the Saints missed a couple field goals. Like, it was less about McCown. Like, it wasn't his fault, you know. I think it was kind of circumstantial that they didn't score more points. But he played well in that game.
All right, considering that he was a backup, we'll give him that. I mean, he wasn't
offensive line was banged up, and so we were worried about him getting sacked, and he was getting the ball out so
27, you were right, 27-22.
He almost won a division game. Give the guy some fucking credit.
Yeah.
Against the Super Bowl defense.
But I think the thing is with McCown, I think it's more of a case of they don't necessarily know that he's going to be healthy enough, and they couldn't take the chance of they get to training camp and McCown, and they're like, oh yeah, McCown, he can't do it physically anymore, even as a backup, you know, because they could get a, I'm saying?
Has there been any sign that McCown's breaking down?
Well, the back surgery though, right?
Yeah, but he was the backup all year last year, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, Mark Brunell was the backup too in 09, and we saw him in that Carolina game at the end of the year, and he looked like a 70-year-old man. But that was, you know, but that was 2009, where Drew Brees was young. Now he's been banged up, so I think the possibility of the backup quarterback playing is more real. You know,
yeah.
So
I agree with you that they hung on to Brunell way too long.
Yeah, I mean, like Brunell, yeah. Like if they think McCown has fallen into Brunell territory where he's just not cut out anymore, like you can't have that. You can't have that for like a couple of weeks. That can wreck your year. You know, if they had a Brunell quality backup this year and he had to play for 3 weeks, it would fuck up their season, even if they were going into that like 6-1 and you're like, Brunell's got to play for 3 weeks. They'd be 6-4 coming out of that. That's how bad Brunell was. Dave, Malcolm Butler's still not a Saint. It's very depressing.
I don't think it's happening. But...
God damn it, Dave! Here's one thing that I listened to a podcast that Nick Underhill was on. It's expat. It's like two ex-Patriot players. Gerard Mayo and somebody else. But they were talking about some stuff. And one thing that I thought was really interesting, Andrew, was last year when they were doing Malcolm Butler's contract, I guess it was not this past December, but the December before when they were talking to him about extension, he wanted like just below like $11 million a year, I guess. And the Patriots are like, dude, listen to us. We are never paying a corner $10 million a year. Get it through your head. And then they gave Gilmore $65 million. I'm thinking that would put him in a rage.
Yeah. Yeah. I would feel burned. I mean, I get it. I think with the Patriots, I think what they told him and what they meant are different things. What they really meant was we're not paying that for a 5'10 corner.
Yeah. You they buddy. Can't, we're not paying
they
you
can't shut down here. The prototype 6'3, 6'4, you know, wide receiver that can run a 4.5 40. So we're not gonna pay a guy with your build and your skill set that kind of money. But if Gilmore comes along, yeah, let's pay him. so, you know, I think the natural vibe of Saints fans would be, well, then why should we pay them? Why should we pay Malcolm Butler?
Because we're
that
desperate.
Much?
That's the difference, buddy.
Yeah, like that's the question. Like, are you guys happy to stay somewhere between 28th and 32nd overall in defense, or do you want to get better?
I want to get better. I don't want fucking 7-9 again. But
then this defense needs guys like Malcolm Butler.
Here's my question. I don't know. Maybe, you know, Dave, you or Andrew can answer this because you're more business savvy than me. I just drink all day. So they were talking about
and text Andrew.
Yeah, and text Andrew football. So. I actually put that on my timesheet today for work. I was like, 4 hours a week I texted Andrew about defensive ends. But here's the question. They were talking on the podcast about, one of the players was like, look, Malcolm Butler should just shut up and pay $500,000 and get a $40 million insurance policy, and that covers him against catastrophic injury. But my question would be, I get it. He can take out a policy, and, like, if he tears up his knee horrifically and his career's over, he gets $40 million. But what happens if he just, does what that dude, that draft pick for Washington did, and tears his Achilles in September, and he's out for 8 months? Does he get the sign? Does he cash in on the insurance policy then, or does it only cover him if it's career ending? You know?
I'm not an adjuster or a lawyer, but I guess it just depends on how everything's written, but I would say probably no, it wouldn't cover that.
I think it's like any other insurance thing where, like, the more risk you're willing to take, the bigger the payout, or you can have, a bigger monthly installment and it can cover more things.
I would think something like that is going to be, the stipulation is going to be, if you suffer an injury that ends your career.
Yeah.
So in other words, if it was the, regardless of whether it was an ACL or an Achilles or whatever, if that was the injury that, if that was the straw that broke the camel's back, if that was the injury that you were never able to recover from and you never got a job in the league after that, that's probably potentially where a policy like that would be.
Yeah, and I mean, the guy on the podcast is like, he's like, just pay the $600,000 and cover yourself and just play the year. I'm like, that dude makes $4 million a year. Who in their right fucking mind would pay, what is that,
right,
a fifth?
One-eighth. $600,000 if he makes $4 million?
Yeah.
That would be like one-eighth. That would be a little bit more than an eighth.
That's an eighth of your salary pre-tax for insurance. That's insane.
No, that's a little, that's a little out of line.
So,
I mean, somebody like Drew Brees would, that would be, that would make more sense to me. Somebody making Drew
Brees. That's what Sean Alexander used to do. You remember, for years, the Seahawks would tag him. And, at the time he was getting $9-10 million a year. And he was like, well, this is great, but you guys keep tagging me every year. And Sean Alexander was actually the reason why in the new CBA, they just kept doing that to him. And so, now they have the increase, the percentage increase if you do it in back-to-back years. And so, that's the thing. Like, he was like, it's great that I'm getting $10 million this year, but if I wreck my knee and I can never play again, then I have no protection. And if I, I'm sure a lot of fans hear that and say, oh, well, $10 million is a lot. But like, for a career, when it's unfair to Alexander, when on an open market, he could have made easily $50 million guaranteed. And so, that's the thing about the franchise tag, is it really screwed elite players, and the Seahawks were happy to just keep doing that to him.
Yeah.
So he took the insurance policy. I mean, he paid a lot of money, but that was the deal with Sean Alexander. If he, broke his neck, he would take out the policy and he'd have $40 million.
So I guess, Andrew, I don't think this is happening before the 21st. Like, Butler is sort of like not going to sign his tender until that window shuts. Maybe he gets another offer, but two, I think it's kind of his like professional business-like way to say to the Patriots, look, I'm done with you. I don't want to come back. So I'm not just going to sign the tender, but my question is, so that's like the window from the draft is the 27th, right? So if it,
I think you got to remember too. So the draft's the 27th, and the deadline for to sign him to an offer sheet is the 21st. So basically, there's no point, unless he was threatening to hold out, there's no point for him after the 21st to not sign the tender that he was given by the Patriots. My guess is that if he signs now, then he gives the Patriots kind of 18 days. To kind of maybe try to convince him to stay, and if he really is truly pissed at them, then he wants, his agent, I'm sure, is telling him, well, no, give me till the 21st. That's, you know, 18 days. Give me 18 days to negotiate with every team in the league and see what the best offer I can get you is, because we're allowed to negotiate with these teams as long as you don't sign, and give them the least amount of time possible. Where, like, you know, they have 6 days, and if, you know, you seem more disgruntled, like, basically a gun's to their head and they've got to make a move. Whereas, like, if he signs now, the Patriots, I mean, would have, you know, 24 days before the draft to kind of play around. And, I mean, they would hold all the cards. So it's about getting some of that leverage back.
Yeah.
And so I think the likelihood of him signing before the 21st is pretty unlikely.
Yeah. So, Dave, you still say it's not going to happen?
No, Dave? He doesn't think it's going to happen at all.
Dave, have you muted?
No, I don't think so.
Damn it, Dave.
No, it's not
happening. Like, you don't think the Saints will get Butler? Is that what you're saying? At all?
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to get him at all, but they're definitely not. It's not definitely not happening before April 21st.
Yeah, yeah.
I
mean, the thing is, after he signs, the Patriots could be stubborn and just be like, "Nope, we're not trading you. You're staying."
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, though, with the Patriots, they I don't think. That's not Bill Belichick's MO when he knows that he can get better than...
Yeah, he wants the picks. Yeah,
I mean, you know, they say, oh, they get a third-round pick. They don't really get a third-round pick. You get a pick after the third round before the fourth. So you're getting picked...
If you sign less players than you lose.
Yeah.
But that's not a guarantee that you get that compensatory pick.
Yeah. So, I mean, if they get it, it's going to be like pick 100 to 105. So if the Saints are offering you 42, the difference between 42 and 105 in 2018 is a lot, you know.
It's astronomical.
You know, that's basically 60 picks, right? So that's basically like three rounds of picks difference. So that's a huge difference. It's a month away from the draft, but the Saints' arguments are already starting. About
60 picks is two rounds, by the way. Right?
60. Ah, my math is shitty. I got Chase Daniel, right? What more do you want, Juge? the draft, I call it the draft, like, anger and argument is starting to begin, where Saints Twitter turns upon itself and people, brother fights brother, and the arguments ensue. People get really mean and angry. Last year, the argument...
The trash emoji when looking at people's mock drafts is in full force.
It gets mean.
Emoji.
And we should love and we should love each other. But here's the thing. Like, last year, it was fans versus fans and fans versus media. And the big name was the Saints should take Jalen Smith in the second round. And me and Andrew...
First round.
And me and Andrew were like, no. That dude has a wrecked knee. He might have dropped foot, which I didn't even know what it was, but it sounded terrible. And me and Andrew were like, no, do not pick the dude with dropped foot in the first four rounds. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. And sure enough, he's probably not going to play ever in the NFL. We were right about that. But it was, I mean, that was heated. I mean, like, I love Nick Underhill, but he actually, like, he didn't block me, but he, like, unfollowed me, then, like, followed me back because, like, the discussion got heated. So, Andrew, and you can chime in, Dave, if you want, but Andrew, what's the player that, like, Saints fans and media and we're just going to fight it out about?
For me, it's got to be Reuben Foster of Alabama, the middle linebacker. And I think a couple things. I think, number one, when you look at the Saints draft strategy, and where you look at free agency and you look at them a year ago signing Stupar and Robertson and this year signing Manti Te'o and AJ Klein, I think it's pretty clear that their strategy is, we're not very good at developing young linebackers. Maybe that changes with Nolan, but I just think they feel like they can get serviceable veterans that come pretty cheap in free agency. They don't have to spend a ton of money, and they can get guys that are pretty good at linebacker. On the other hand, the corner and pass rushing market is completely out of hand in free agency. And so they feel like, okay, if we can load up on linebacker in free agency, which they've done the last 2 years, then we can draft the other positions that we need defensively.
And veteran linebackers.
Where we don't have to spend as much.
And veteran linebackers, they're just better at it. Like, the veteran linebackers.
So number one, I would say from just a strategy standpoint, it's pretty clear. It's unlikely they draft a linebacker. Mm-hmm. But I think if Reuben Foster falls to 11, then there's this whole thing about he's got the shoulder injury. So, drafting an injured player, a guy that's coming in with a known injury, and he's already a little slight of frame for a middle linebacker, you take a lot of hits on that shoulder. So, that already should make you nervous. Then there's this whole combine red flag thing. And, unless someone hits a woman, which I think Saints Twitter universally rules them out, any other character issue, like Saints Twitter, if the guy has talent, they're always willing to overlook it. Always. The fact of the matter is the Saints don't really take red flag guys in the first round unless they're certain that, they like the guy. And so I don't know what happened to the combine, and it might not be a big deal, but I just know that right now Foster is operating with 1.5 strikes against him. I just don't think the Saints should take him.
I'm going to say something about it, and I'm going to use one of my sources. It's one of the people, it's a low-level Saints employee, but they do go to the combine. And they said to me...
My baby's got sauce.
Sauces. And he said, have you ever known anyone to get kicked out of a job interview? And that's what happened to Reuben Foster. He got kicked out of a job interview at the combine. And take that for what you will, but he's like a low-level Saints person that went to the combine. And he repeated that to me, and I was like, that's interesting that a Saints person would say that to me about Reuben Foster.
Yeah.
If he's
sending a letter to all 32 teams basically apologizing, that's not a good thing.
So
that's not just overlooked is not a big deal.
So, Dave, do you have a player or position that you think Saints fans are going to fight about on the Twitters with the media and get blocked and muted and all kinds of nasty things?
Fight about with media, meaning what?
Argue over some people
don't want him?
Yeah.
Leonard Fournette.
Leonard Fournette.
Yeah, I really hope Fournette goes to the Jags at 4 because I really, really don't want the Panthers to take him. And then if he falls to 11, then, I half want the Saints to consider it.
No. See, this is where
we part company, my friend. Dave is vehemently anti-Fournette.
Oh, my God. Hey, look, and it's not because – I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again. It's not because I think Fournette won't be a good player in the NFL. It's because he's fucking wasted with Sean Payton as his head coach calling plays.
That's kind of how I feel about Solomon Thomas, too.
Really? Why?
On the other side.
Why? You just feel like the Saints won't know how to use him properly?
Yeah, he'll be wasted.
Yeah, my fear with the Saints on defense is I don't like them to pick players that, they're like, well, he might fit here, he might fit there, and good coaches can figure it out. I'm like, the Saints aren't really.
It's like Solomon Thomas is like, oh, he's got flexibility. He can go inside and out depending on down distance. No.
No, we want
to. Don't overcomplicate things for this coaching staff. Just give me a guy that's a clear fit.
Yeah. So.
Somebody on Twitter today was saying we don't need another Cam Jordan.
Oh my God, that's the
like
that
no,
is the
like
argument.
No joke. Like the thing this team maybe needs the most is another Cam Jordan.
It's like yes, Cam Jordan is a 8 to 10 sack, not an elite pass rusher, but a really good pass rusher, and he's really good against the run. If you have two of them on either end. Your defense is really good. And the teams right now, what do we always joke about every week, Andrew? It's what's the strategy of the defense? It's the question that any offense that plays the Saints, they have to ask is, can we block Cam Jordan? And if the answer is yes, you're going to be fine. And if the answer is no, you might be fine anyway, but you might be fucked. If you have two of them, you'll be better off. And people do not like Cam Jordan. I don't understand what the dislike of him is.
I mean, I'm down with getting Von Miller. Just explain to me how that's going to happen. But about Reuben Foster, people on Twitter, on Saints Twitter, love that dude. I love him. Like, they really think Reuben Foster fixes the Saints defense. And so I really think that's the guy that where it'll the meltdowns will ensue and it'll come to blows on Twitter.
I think it's probably a 60% chance that he's going to be there at 11. Maybe higher.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But we'll get into we'll get into dream scenarios for the draft because we got a month. So now we got to go and continue the best corner in Saints history. We continue the sad journey that is the best corner in Saints history. There hasn't been a sadder continuing series since PBS's 9-part documentary, Miss Lincoln's Favorite Part of Ford Theater. This bracket is so fucking sad. And we're in round two. We're only going to do half of it because I can't take this much sadness in my life. Round two, we're going to start number one seed, Andrew Dave Wehmer, number 16, Reggie Sutton.
Yeah, I can't even remember Sutton that well, and frankly, I don't.
He blocked a bunch of punts and did cocaine.
Okay, well, I like cocaine. You know, we did figure out after last week's podcast, by the way, that the newscaster, you know, the foxy lady, what's her name? Vivian Lee. Remember we were.
Yeah, Vivian Lee.
Tamika Lee. Her dad was Vivian Lee. I had no idea.
Yeah.
That was.
No idea.
Anyway, I'm voting for Wehmer.
Yeah, I vote Wehmer. Dave, who you got?
Wehmer.
Yeah. Number 8, Ernie Jackson. Number 9, Fred Thomas. I feel like Fred Thomas is very much hated, but I feel like Fred Thomas had some really good years for the Saints, and people just remember the end, so they hate him. But he was really good.
The NFC Championship game.
Yeah, I mean, but he had good years, man.
No, I agree with you. I think he's gotten kind of a bad rap.
So you're going Fred Thomas?
Yeah, I think I will.
Andrew?
You know, I think this is a close one for me. But ultimately at the end of the day, I like Fred Thomas. I'm not one of these guys that like blasted him, but I do still remember the NFC Championship game. And
it was bad. It was pretty bad.
I mean, yeah. And then not only that, but Ernie Jackson is in the top 10 for career picks. I mean, he's got 15 and Thomas has 13. So I'm voting for Jackson.
Ah, well, you lose. Number 4, Jabari Greer. Number 13, Jimmy Spencer. Andrew, who you got?
Jabari. Not even close.
Yeah. Dave, yep. Who you got? Jabari. Jabari in a clean sweep. Jabari can get to a semifinal in this one. So
Jabari
number
could win this whole thing.
Johnny Poe, number 5, 12, Tracy Porter. This gets tricky because Tracy Porter is the legend. Johnny Poe is not as terrible as Saints fans remember him to be.
Poe is number 6 all time in Saints history with 17 interceptions.
So,
how many in the Super Bowl and the NFC champion?
Not a one.
I feel like Tracy Porter, on the strength of the NFC championship interception, has to get to the next round. So
not the Super Bowl one, not the one that won the game for them. The Super Bowl one.
I feel like. Was just like the cherry on top. But that NFC Championship interception saved their fucking ass, Dave. I mean, if he drops that ball, Minnesota can kick that field goal. Like, if he doesn't intercept that pass against the Colts, like the maybe Peyton Manning goes down and score, maybe, you know, it would have only tied the game if the Colts go and score.
Why would you throw that?
Why? Yeah, great sound.
You can take a knee.
This is the Super Bowl, man. Poor Minnesota. Brad Childress. I go Tracy Porter. Dave, who you got?
Oh, yeah. Tracy Porter.
Andrew,
I pose another one that is kind of sneaky hated. You know?
Oh, no.
He was a pretty good corner.
If you're over 45, you hate him.
I mean, I love Porter. I love Steve Gleason, too. You know, that's the thing. It's not like Steve Gleason is a better Saints player than Deuce McAllister or whatever. Like, at some point you gotta base it on who had a better career, who's more consistent. And
yeah,
Porter was a guy. I mean, it's like Chris Reese made a great play in the Super Bowl. Is he one of the greatest Saints of all time? No.
Yes.
So I would vote
maybe.
Maybe. Let's discuss it. have a podcast on in the middle of June.
Make 64.
So Porter wins 2-1.
Yeah. Dave, number two, Dave Witzel.
Are Porter and Greer on opposite ends of the bracket?
No, they're about to play today.
They're about to play.
Oh, okay.
Number two, Dave Witzel. Number 15, Van Jakes. Andrew, who you got? It's got to be.
I mean, Witzel is the first corner ever in Saints history, and he's still the best. That's how sad.
That's right. Dave, yeah. Who you got?
Wait, who did Andrew vote for?
Dave Witzel. Dave Witzel was bald, too.
Ah,
he looked like
his name Dave, and he's bald like me. Yeah, I gotta vote for him.
I vote for Dave Witzel too. I want him to win the whole thing so we can say the best corner in Saints history was the guy that had 10 interceptions their first year of existence. This is dicey, Andrew. Keenan Lewis, number 7, number 10, Ashley Ambrose. This is dicey.
You know, this might be petty, but Lewis is kind of
an ass.
I've really soured on that guy lately. Which is a bummer because he's a New Orleans guy, and I mean, you know,
yeah.
Ambrose was kind of a cool story, you know, and but Ambrose did play for the Falcons, so this is tough. But I think I got to go Ambrose.
Yeah, I'm gonna go Ambrose. Man, Ambrose is 99. It's not quite it. You know, when we were doing this bracket and we were arguing back and forth and we were doing it on Twitter, I said that his 99 season is the best season in Saints history, and you were like, no. Dave Wehmer and Witzel, which is true, but it's probably the third best season. He had 6 picks, and he returned one for a touchdown, and he was really freaking good in 99. And the Saints actually tried real – like, they had – you know, they fired Ditka, and they brought in Haslam, and they brought in Rennie. Like, they tried really hard to keep him. They were like, please stay, and he's like, you're a train wreck. I'm leaving. But he went to Atlanta and didn't really win, you know, so it didn't really work out well for him. But – I'm going to vote Ambrose, too, man, because just Keenan Lewis. God damn him. Dave, who you got?
I don't even really. I don't know. I mean, it sounds like, I think Ambrose's best season was better than Keenan Lewis's best season, so I guess I'll go with Ambrose.
So
yeah, and who and with Keenan really Lewis, I mean, who didn't see Keenan Lewis's season with their career with the Saints ending with a leg injury?
I mean, with those flamingo legs. I mean,
yeah. Number 3, Mike McKenzie. Number 14, Eric Allen. I feel like Mike McKenzie is like the Malcolm Butler doppelganger because they gave up a second round pick for Mike McKenzie and then signed him to the extension, Andrew. I hope that Butler's as good as Mike McKenzie was because he was really good for the Saints.
Oh, yeah, he was great. And then Eric Allen, I mean...
Trash.
I voted against Eric Allen in the first round. He can't get out of this tournament fast enough for me. I hated that
Tom
guy.
Benson's money. Dave, who you got?
McKenzie. It's not even close.
Dave, who you got?
Just for the Patriots game on Mike McKenzie. Monday night.
That was great. They had him and Chris McAllister.
Two interceptions, I think he had that game.
That was phenomenal.
So, McKenzie.
Signing guys off the street and working out against Tom Brady. Ooh.
Brady didn't even finish that game.
They called No Moss and benched Brady, which is phenomenal.
They fucking put up a flag.
Raise the white flag. All right, this is the last one of the second round. Andrew, this tournament's so bad. How did these two assholes get to the second round?
This is only half of the second round?
No, we're done. This is the last one of the second round. Toy Cook, Andrew, number 6, versus 22, Vince Buck. How did both of those clowns...
Wow, so one of those clowns is going to be in the quarterfinals.
Yes.
It's going to be in the final 8. I mean, they were both terrible. You got on one hand, you got Toast Cook. Vince Buck was awful.
He was awful.
God, I mean, he was awful.
Vince Suck.
Go ahead.
I mean, I can't believe Toy Cook. You know who they called Toast Cook? He had 16 picks in his career, so he's 7th in team history. I mean, the thing about Cook is that. If he played on the Saints now, it would be so much worse. Like, he had the benefit of playing on one of the best front sevens in NFL history, and he was still terrible. Yeah. So can you imagine how bad he would have been? But you know, he had a lot of picks, and he gambled a lot. So I guess I'm going to go with Toy Cook, because Vince Buck has no redeeming quality.
No, he does not. Toy Cook, Toy Cook was bad, but in the context of this tournament,
he had a little bit of Jason David in him. Like, yeah, he gambled and would get some picks.
He gambled and he was very he got a lot of pass interference calls, even by even back then. So today it would just rain flags on him. He was very handsy. But for this tournament, I feel like Toy Cook, we hate him, but in the Saints history of corners, he's not bad, and he's much better than Vince Buck. So, Dave, who you got?
Toy Cook.
All right, so that gets it. We got some semifinals. I mean, some quarterfinals next week, boy. Whoo, popping. So
I mean, how bad are your corners when? Seriously, I'm gonna read you the top eight. Dave Wehmer. Okay, fine. Fred Thomas is a top eight corner in Saints history. Jabari Greer, Tracy Porter, Dave Witzel. Ashley Ambrose, I mean, what did he play, two seasons for the Saints?
No, he played the 1 year and then left, and then
he came back
and he was old and broken.
Right.
And then
McKenzie and Toy Cook. I mean, that's the top eight in team history.
Good God. All right, so we'll get to that. We'll get to that next week. Now we got questions. Dave, this is from Matthew. What's your thoughts on the straight-tailed crawfish nonsense? I don't even know what that is.
Ooh. You don't know what that is?
I don't know what that is.
Are you talking about, is this like a recent thing or just
no,
in general?
No. I've been out of Louisiana too long.
Well, no. I mean, you're just talking about you don't eat the straight ones because they're dead, or they were dead before you cooked them?
Yeah, that's what people say, which even if that was true, that doesn't necessarily make them bad, but people believe that they're like, you know, no good, or they might.
Ralph, you've never been to a crawfish boil?
I have, but it's been a long time, and I only have the one good arm. Peeling the crawfish is a pain in the ass.
Yeah, that's true.
And I just.
Right.
You've never heard that? Did they tell you that you're not supposed to eat the ones with the straight tails?
No, I've never heard that.
What?
I've never heard that. My family.
Ralph, are you seriously from New Orleans?
Yeah, my family had crawfish boils for 20 years, but my family, they're weird.
You've seriously never heard of don't eat a straight crawfish tail?
I've never heard that. I've never heard that.
Oh, my God.
Jesus.
Well, anyway, my answer to the question is I probably a bunch of baloney. I'm sure it's fine, but I will just toss it aside and move on.
If somebody peels
so
it.
So you don't eat them.
If somebody would peel it for me, I would eat it.
Just out of superstition, I guess.
If somebody would peel it for me, I would eat it. This is from Matthew, too.
My grandmother, by the way, just mailed us. My grandmother, my wife's.
My wife.
Her mom, my mother-in-law, just mailed us crawfish from Baton Rouge.
Nice.
And so I just ate about 10 pounds this week, and I definitely ate all the straight tails.
Yeah. Andrew, this is from Matthew.
I ate all the straight tails. They were delicious, and I'm not sick.
How do you feel about Jordan Lewis? I like him a lot, but had off-field incident recently. He's the corner from Michigan.
From Michigan.
I don't like him because he spells his name J-O-U-R-D.
Jordan.
Yeah. I like that.
I've watched some tape on him. He's pretty solid. I think the reason he would drop is, I believe, now I'm doing this from memory, but I feel like he's like 5'10", kind of like Malcolm Butler. So
he had an off-field
incident. There's just so many corners in this draft that are 6+ and run really well.
He had that sick interception against Wisconsin. That's how I know him.
Yeah, but I just think guys like him and guys like Tre'Davious White may fall a little bit just because they're a little smaller and they don't run like all these 6-foot-plus guys that are running 4.5 40s.
If the Saints get a D end, if they would get like Barnett or whoever you prefer as a pass rusher at 11, or you know, trade down and get him, and then get White at 32, I will fucking streak naked around the loop in Paraland. I'll be so excited about that. And I don't even care that they can do that, Andrew. They can do that if they get Butler. If they sign Butler and they get White at 32, I'll still run the circle at Paraland naked, because they need more than Butler at corner. Dave, this is for you. This is for you.
Hold on. I want to answer the question, though. I mean, I feel like they took PJ Williams in the third round, and he had a little bit of a red flag character-wise. And I think Lewis is a really good player. And similarly, I think in the third round, if he's there and you like the value, I like the way he plays. So I would totally be cool with getting him in the third round.
Yeah, this is from Jack. Dave, what happens first? Atlanta wins the Super Bowl or Sean Orleans appears in WrestleMania? Kevin's not here to defend himself, but you can answer that.
Yeah. Well, and unfortunately, I think Atlanta would win the Super Bowl before that ever happened. I mean, he's just, he's got Mother Nature is against him. I mean, he's not a big dude. Even if he's even working out.
Hashtag dad bod. I'd like to believe that if Kevin was on this podcast, he would be crushing Ralph for never having heard of Straight Crawfish Tales.
He probably would. You know? What can I say? You know? My family doesn't believe in voodoo. What do you want me to tell you? So, Jack asked Andrew, the best player available is tied with corner or defensive end at 11. Who do you choose?
What players?
No, I mean, like, there's a corner and a defensive end, and on the Saints board, they have the exact same grade at 11. Who do you pick?
Oh, just so basically which position is a bigger need right now?
Yeah.
Oh, I think I would go defensive end. Like, I would rather fix the pass rush and just hope and pray that it's good enough to bail out, you know, trash corners.
Incorrect.
But I'm assuming that this says that we're not adding Malcolm Butler, like under this hypothetical.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I would still go defensive end, but I would be very scared about corner. I mean, I don't feel good about either. Let me be clear.
Let's see. How dumb are the Panthers waiting until April to give Cam Newton rotator cuff surgery? Dave, was that dumb? Dave?
I hadn't heard about that, and if that is true, that does seem a little silly. That seems like something you'd want to have him do the day after the season ends.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing with Cam Newton is...
Well, I bet, I mean, with I have a rotator cuff injury, so I think a lot of times what they do if it's a partial tear is they tell you to just rehab the heck out of it, and, you know, they hope that you can get it back to like 95%, and then it's good to go. And my guess is that he tried to rehab it, and it wasn't taking. And so they said, all right, well, this is as far as we can go. If the rehab hasn't worked up to this point, if we wait any longer, then you're risking being affected for training camp. And so that's why they probably went ahead.
I'll make a prediction right now.
100% legitimate.
I don't think Cam Newton is going to age well as a quarterback.
That's the least hot take of hot takes ever.
Well, I mean, no. I mean, like he's not
a mobile quarterback who takes a lot of hits.
He's not gonna be he's not gonna be any good after the age.
You're like those guys that are like, I so called that RG3 would be a flash in the pan. Like,
I thought RG3 after he eviscerated the Saints was gonna win 9 straight MVPs. He destroyed the Saints that opening day in 2012. Like, and the Saints were like, I don't know what's going on. What is this spread? It's the 6 plays he ran at Baylor, fuckwad. You know? What will Steve Sarkisian be drinking out of his flask when calling plays for the Falcons during games? Oh, that's mean, Dylan. I hope he's drinking out of the flask by October, though. So that's even meaner. This is from Will, Andrew. If the Butler deal never comes through, do the Saints trade for another corner?
Yeah, I mean, Richard Sherman and Trumaine Johnson with the Rams are two names that have been thrown out there as potential.
Joe Hayden. From the Browns. That's like a give the Browns back their compensatory third round pick and get Joe Hayden.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the Saints have gone all in to try to get Josh Norman. They have gone all in to try to get Butler. If both don't work out, it's pretty clear how important this is to the Saints, you know, and they're going to find someone. They have to.
This is an interesting question from Eric, Dave. At number 11, the Saints can either draft a defensive lineman with Cedric Ellis's career or Junior Gallette's, including the dead money, including the dead money and the belts. Who do you take?
The belts. That's a great question.
I would say Ellis was close to Pro Bowl level, but not quite. But Junior Gallette, when he was good, he had two legit
Monster
Pro Bowl
years.
Seasons. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a hard question.
Yeah. That's a great question. That is a very good, well thought out, well researched.
Yes.
Like Gallette had the higher highs and the lower lows, I would say,
right,
between the two.
And Cedric Ellis was just plateaued the entire career.
No, yeah. He was really good. Cedric Ellis, we felt
stop
like,
it, Ralph. Just stop it.
It felt like he was.
No,
about
I agree.
He was. Cedric Ellis.
He was good his rookie year, and then he got better his second year, and then his third year, he was borderline awesome.
That was
and
what
we really
2000.
Felt like, okay, this is it. Like he's
that
coming
was 2010,
on year four.
Right when he was really good.
Yeah, and we felt like, okay, Ced Ellis is like this is his breakout year. This is it, and that was the year that he completely fell off a cliff.
Weirdest. If we had a weird Saints career bracket, he'd be a number.
He'd be a number one
seed.
And then he went on to play another how many years after? I mean,
none.
You know.
Like one or two.
None. He played none. He played none. He signed with the Bears, then retired. Like he never played again.
No. He was with the Saints for more than 3 years.
Yeah, he was. Ralph.
He played out. No, Cedric Ellis played out his contract.
I'm working it up right now.
He played out his contract with the Saints, but after that, he never played again. I don't think.
I think I think he was with the Saints for like 5 years.
He played out his 5-year deal with the Saints.
Okay, so we had two shitty seasons, one okay one.
No, you guys are right. He played 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had 3 good seasons and then 2 bad ones.
Yeah. And they traded him.
Mediocre, in my opinion.
I guess.
And they traded up to get him. That's right.
Yeah.
They traded up to 8.
Like in year 3, he had 44 tackles and 6 sacks. That was a career high year.
That's
what year? His third one?
2010. That was his third year.
That's basically Fairley's the year this year. That's a
That's
a great year for a D tackle, especially a 25-year-old D tackle.
And then he fell off the cliff.
Yes. Which makes no sense.
Not right.
So what would you do? What would you do, Dave?
Oh, jeez.
I love that question.
You know what? Actually, it's an easy answer, and it's I think you go with Cedric Ellis. I mean, and the reason is because Gallette comes with all that dead money, and I mean the amount of money
Saints. That is true. That is I have had dead
to pay.
Money.
Yeah, I've had to pay for Gallette when he's not even on the team, and that has significantly. I mean, I think his contract was like at the top of the dead money list there, and that severely has got the Saints and not allowed them to rebuild their defense.
Andrew, wasn't
I think the
like
ghost.
Million?
I think the ghost of Junior Gallette is still haunting them.
It's like $15 million in dead money for 1 year. Like it was ridiculous.
Yeah,
15. Yeah, it was horrible.
Andrew, who would you?
And not to mention that, but he got liquored up on social media and started saying, "Cut the check, Mickey."
I don't know though. The thing is, the Saints are so close, possibly to the end of the Breeze era. If you told me that you could have draft a guy and he would get 11 sacks or 10 and a half sacks this year, that might be enough to get to the Saints to playoffs. I think I would take the Gallette and just wait for the bomb to go off. Because you get 22 sacks over 2 years, man.
I don't know. Depending on how you look at it, the belt video is either god-awful or kind of great.
I don't
know. Do you remember when that video came out and I was the one that proved that, and when Gallette said that wasn't him and his friends?
Yeah.
I do remember
Dave
that.
Dave made the collage.
He had like the PowerPoint with the numbers.
Yeah. Dave was like Woodward and Bernstein, like breaking it down. He's like.
And everybody was like, yep, this definitely proves it. That's fucking you.
You're Sherlock Cariello.
Yeah. It might be the of Dave's stewardship of Canal Street Chronicles, that might have been the high point.
Oh yeah! Amazing investigative work.
that got a lot of hits.
Did you win a Peabody?
That got shared. I didn't win a Peabody. That got shared a lot though at the time. And remember, it was like this was like in July, so there was nothing else to even talk about.
All right.
I feel like that was the one time that the Saints beat writers like Larry Holder and Cat Terrell and a bunch of others and Triplett were all sharing Canal Street Chronicles material.
Yeah.
So it's like, what is going on? The media is feeding the blog.
So this is our last question, then we'll get out of here. Do you prefer high ceiling or high floor in general? That's a good question. That's from Brian. I would say right now in the way the Saints are, Andrew, I want high floor because of where they are with Drew Brees, and you never know when it's going to be over for him. I want high floor guys, you know?
Would you – yeah, I mean, would you consider Michael Thomas a high ceiling or a high floor guy? Like, I'm not sure he's either. I expected him to be solid. I knew his I don't know that he had a low floor, but I mean,
I would say him. I would say he would have been a high ceiling guy. Like, you would expect the Saints as a rookie receiver. Like, they Marcus Colson did really well, but I was expecting him to be like a, you know, like a 45-50 catch guy. But that's a great point. But I mean, for me,
I don't know that it's mutually exclusive is my point.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, I'm maybe a little risk adverse, especially in the draft, which is such a crapshoot. So I would say, you know, I would probably prefer solid guys that, you know, aren't going to be awful.
I'm risk averse in general, Dave, but my thing is, I just feel like if they can get the defensive end pick right and get average to above average guy and add him to the defensive line, they have the potential to be really good. So I'm like, for the defensive line, like, if you told me there's a 30% chance that this guy will be Von Miller, but there's a 70% chance that he'll bust, or this guy, there's an 80% chance that this guy's going to give you 6.5 sacks a year for 5 years, I would take that guy in a heartbeat, because I feel like they just need competence at defensive end. So it's really weird. Like, I want a high floor guy at defensive end desperately. The rest, I'm kind of negotiable on. But Dave,
You want a high floor guy at defense?
Yes,
I want a high ceiling guy.
I want a high floor guy at defensive end.
Well, you know, I've always been a Patriots Belichick fanboy, and I mean, I feel like what they do is they get high floor guys. They get guys who aren't necessarily amazing at their position, but they get guys who are good and who get the job done, and they fit the role.
That's the thing, when guys get injured, those guys step up and they're not incompetent. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I'd be happy to hold a team of high floor guys. I think we could do.
Yeah. So that'll do it for this podcast. We wrap it up. You can go to Saints Nation. Andrew's doing mock drafts with all kinds of fun stuff and trades and different things and crazy one. Although the Saints, Andrew released one last week, and then the Saints signed Raphael Bush like 10 minutes after he posted it and basically set it on fire. Right, Andrew?
Yep.
Because you had it.
Yep.
You had a safety.
Thanks a lot, Saints.
Couldn't have waited a day to announce that. So, but you can go there.
Yeah, that's how I felt about that.
So Dave will be writing his column, his season preview, probably in week 4 of the season. Right around October 1st, so you can catch on that.
Maybe I should write like a why your team sucks for the Saints, and that'll be my one article of the year.
Oh man,
why the Saints will suck this year,
dude? The Drew McGarry why your team sucks. He is going to eviscerate the Saints for trading Brandon Cooks to the Patriots. One, because he'll say it's a bad move, and two, he hates the Patriots so much, and the Saints just made them better. So he'll just pile on the hate for the Saints. It could potentially be a good read. So, go to Saints Nation. Find Dave on the Twitters. Sometimes he runs the Canal Street Chronicle Twitter handle. Kevin's at a backyard wrestling event near you if you're in the greater St. Louis area. And I am Ralph Marlboro. Until next week, the bar is closed.